from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The video begins with images of a mother with small children getting ready to go back to work, Hispanic brothers starting their own business, a gay couple getting ready for their wedding, Americans of all stripes, and then a familiar face and voice.
I'm getting ready to do something, too. I'm running for president.
And with that, Hillary Clinton made it official yesterday. She's running again. If she wins, she'll be the country's first female president. But as she learned in 2008, there are no guarantees, even if she doesn't have a serious Democratic Party competitor for the nomination. A big GOP field is ready to take her on. This hour on Point, Hillary Clinton in the race again. You can join us on air or online when this conversation is always on. Are you glad she's back? Does she have the right vision for the country for this time? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. 2 minutes and what, 18 seconds in that video? And a lot of it, most of it, given over to everyday people getting ready for something.
After 5 years of raising my children, I am now going back to work.
Every day we're trying to get more ready and more prepared.
The baby boy coming your way.
Right now I'm applying for jobs. It's a look into what the real world will look like after college.
I'm getting married this summer to someone I really care about.
I'm going to be in the play and I'm going to be in a fish costume. From little tiny fishes.
I'm getting ready to retire soon. Retirement means reinventing yourself in many ways.
A highly produced video, and then on a suburban street, here is Hillary Clinton.
I'm getting ready to do something, too. I'm running for president. Americans have fought their way back from tough economic times, but the deck is still stacked in favor of those at the top. Everyday Americans need a champion, and I want to be that champion. So you can do more than just get by. You can get ahead and stay ahead. Because when families are strong, America is strong. So I'm hitting the road to earn your vote. Because it's your time. And I hope you'll join me on this journey.
She's on the road right now on her way to Iowa. Joining us from Washington, two big political watchers, Ruth Marcus, columnist at the Washington Post. Ruth, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you here.
Hey, great to be here, Tom.
And Howard Fineman, editorial director of the Huffington Post Media Group. Howard, always great to have you with us.
Hi, Tom. Great to be with you.
Ruth, at the end of that video, I feel like I should be buying something, Clintivia, or I don't know what. It's such a familiar kind of Madison Avenue ad layout. What did you think of this long-awaited, here I am, Ruth?
My version is Verizon ad without the substance. I understand why they did it this way, but I really didn't like it. I thought it was relentlessly and slightly insultingly substance-free. And I know we're going to get a lot of substance in the campaign, and I know an announcement video is not supposed to be a seminar from the Brookings Institution, but golly gee, is that really what America wants to see?
Howard, somebody must have thought so. And how do you read the strategy behind this presentation of this candidate this time, Hillary Clinton?
Well, I'm not as critical as Ruth is on this one. Partly because I vividly remember, and as I'm sure Ruth does, the way Hillary Clinton launched her candidacy in 2008, or rather 2007, for the 2008 campaign, and this is a million times better than that. That one had Hillary sitting rather imperiously in her sunroom of her obviously very grand home. Welcoming us in and allowing us to coronate her for president. And that was disastrously condescending and aloof and set the tone for what turned out to be a losing campaign. Here, I agree with Ruth on the substance-free nature of it, except for the fact that Hillary, I think, does have a theme here. Whether she can sell it or not, I don't know. But it's family, and that may be ironic to many people given the tumultuous history of the Clintons themselves. But she's selling the idea that families are her goal, and she's going to make that a unifying theme and hang various proposals off of that around the idea of strengthening the family, allowing it to get ahead rather than just get by, which neatly praises Obama's tenure but takes her forward into something else. So I thought, all things considered, it wasn't bad. It certainly wasn't. It didn't have the flavor of the Onion headline, I think, which today said Hillary launches campaign, tells nation not to screw things up. You know, this wasn't like that.
Ruth, you've been a Hillary supporter. You've also been very tough on Hillary in some recent columns. Here we are looking at 2016. We've got months and months to go, as you and Howard both point out. How do you see her position this time in terms of what she may have learned since 2008, her thinking about policy, her political position, given the likely competitors?
Well, so her political position, honestly, could scarcely be better. Think we have never seen, at least in my lifetime, a race in which a non-incumbent or non-incumbent vice president is so hugely the front runner. It all but unopposed. I mean, there will be some token opposition, but she essentially has the field clear. And for those who argue that she would be better off with some Democratic opposition to strengthen her and test her and get her ready for a general election campaign, I would say that there's no monopolist around who is happy to give up his or her monopoly power. And as you saw in the barrage of criticism that has been unleashed by Republicans and other partisan critics of Hillary Clinton, and also, as you can tell from my slightly testy comments, she is not going to lack for critics and testing during her stately march to the Democratic nomination. So in that sense, she's in terrific shape. She is going to face a Republican nominee, and she is going to face the fact that it is also against historical odds for a nominee to win the presidency after two parties, after the same party has had it for two terms.
And she's up against that. Of course, that it was something that people jumped on yesterday. Rand Paul was ready to wrap the entire disaffection with a lot going on in Washington around the neck of Hillary Clinton in his ad, which came right down the pike.
Hillary Clinton represents the worst of the Washington machine. The arrogance of power, corruption and cover-up, conflicts of interest, and failed leadership with tragic consequences. The Washington machine is destroying the American dream.
What do you say, Howard? There's a lot of time here. There's a lot of years. There's a lot of engagement with Washington. There's a lot of disenchantment with Washington around the country. Can she overcome that?
Well, that's the obvious challenge. There are a lot of good things associated with being part of the enterprise, the political enterprise known as the Clintons. She's got 100% name ID. She's going to have access to a lot of money. They're claiming that she's going to raise and spend over $2 billion in this campaign, which is an astonishing figure, but not surprising. She's got deep networks. She's a woman, which I think on balance is a net plus in our political environment today. But she's got a huge, long record, and she's got a record both in and out of office. She's got to carry a lot of the Bill Clinton baggage with her still, even though Bill Clinton was nowhere to be seen in that launch ad, by the way. And she's got her time as Secretary of State, which people will pick apart. But more than any of that, it's the fact that the Clintons have built themselves into this big, ongoing political enterprise, the big foundation that raises all kinds of money from sometimes questionable sources, all the contacts they've had over the years. It's a sort of big behemoth of a machine. And Rand Paul, as the libertarian, is correct to identify the weakness of that, which is that it is a machine. And he's running against it specifically. I think all the Republicans will. And that's the big challenge she has, plus the fact that how do you make it new? American election, presidential elections are almost always, when they're non-incumbent elections, are about what's next, about what's new. And that's going to be hard for her to do. She's got to try, but it's going to be difficult.
Ruth, what about that, the fresh factor here? I mean, there are ongoing contests of ideas and ideas about how to govern this country, political philosophies. Hillary Clinton has been in the midst of those for a long, long time now. With all of that history, she's got experience. But as Howard says, you know, hope and change, those are often very powerful themes in presidential elections. Does she have the backdrop to bring that this time?
Well, the fresh factor is obviously going to be a factor, but the degree to which it's going to be a factor probably will depend on who the Republican nominee is. And so it will be very interesting to watch the contrast this week as Marco Rubio announces his presidential bid. Talk about fresh. I mean, he is a first-term senator, much younger than Secretary Clinton is. That will be an interesting contrast. But it will be different if Secretary Clinton is running against a Marco Rubio or other youngish candidate, or if she's running against, yes, yet another political dynasty in the form of Jeb Bush. So that will make a difference. Howard made a very interesting point about the sort of subtle theme or not so subtle theme of the video being about family, because isn't it interesting that even though it was about family, none of our family was to be seen? That was a very interesting choice. I kind of wanted to see the granddaughter personally.
I think we'll
There'll be plenty of time to see the granddaughter. We'll be seeing a lot of Charlotte. We'll be seeing a lot of Charlotte Mezvinsky.
Yes, Charlotte, of course, her granddaughter, Chelsea's daughter, and she is already talking a lot about the granddaughter and her status as a grandmother. No hiding that anywhere, no putting gender off to the side.
No,
this
she's been embracing two things, Tom, actually. She has been embracing gender in a way that's very, very different from the 2008 campaign, and I think smart. And she's been embracing grandmahood, which has the upside of humanizing her and getting people like me a little misty-eyed about the prospect of being a grandma, not quite yet, but also raises the potential risk that they've clearly acknowledged of making her look oldish.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Hillary Clinton, formally in the race for the White House again, her game plan for 2016 and what she would bring to governing the nation. Ruth Marcus is with us, columnist for The Washington Post. Howard Fineman is here from Huffington Post, editorial director of AOL Huffington Post Media Group there. Of course, last time it was a Democratic challenger, Barack Obama, who eventually took her out on June 7th, 2008, after winning the South Dakota primary but losing in Montana, put Barack Obama over the top of delegates. Hillary Clinton formally ended her candidacy, endorsed Barack Obama, talked about the historical campaign as the first woman ever to win presidential primaries.
Although we weren't able to shatter that highest, hardest glass ceiling this time, thanks to you, it's got about 18 million cracks in it.
And she's hoping it will come down. This time, she's taking her show on the road on her way to Iowa as we speak. Maybe there by the time you hear this, as a grandmother. Here she was last month at the UN.
Now, of course, that I'm a grandmother, I want to make sure that all children have those same opportunities to live up to their own God-given potential. And that's up to us to make sure the world they inherit is worthy of them.
All children in a world worthy of them, maybe some climate issues and certainly some equity and opportunity issues embedded right there in those comments last month. We're going to think about the Democratic Party's progressive wing and what they're thinking as Hillary Clinton takes the stage in just a couple of minutes here. First, some callers. New York, Fulton, New York. Joyce, thank you for calling, Joyce. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you think?
I'm happy to see Hillary in the race. I'm a longtime Hillary supporter. I honestly, this might be tangential, but I felt that she quit too soon last time. She was rather forced out by the media. What I'd like to see from her is being genuine, being herself, and being honest, and not doing and saying what she feels is politically expedient. I felt that I am a gay person who is legally married now and recognized since they overturned DOMA, recognized also by the IRS, so I was able to file jointly in New York State and with the federal this year. You know, Bill Clinton, right, was pressured to sign the Defense of Marriage Act that's been overturned. During the campaign, both Hillary and President Obama, I felt, lied about how they truly felt about marriage equality. They felt that they had to say that they believe marriage is between only a man and a woman. We know that that's not really how they felt today. I'd like to see honesty. I think that young people are voting, and if Hillary is genuine and sticks to her beliefs, she will end up on the right side of history.
Put all the cards on the table this time, you say, Joyce, and face up. Ruth Marcus, the first big piece we see out of the Times here, New York Times, after this announcement, is that she needs to lay out her rationale for being president. Joyce just wants to know what she honestly believes. Of course, she's a politician. But what about this rationale question, and what drives her? Is that murky in your mind, Ruth?
Well, I think that the details of it are certainly murky, and the details of it, what it involves in 2015 and 2016, are murky. So she said in her video that she was running because the deck is stacked against ordinary Americans. And I think that is a serious and rather compelling campaign theme. But the question is, what exactly does that mean in terms of specific policy prescriptions? What will she do? Some of the open questions are, where will she be on issues before Congress right now in terms of free trade agreements? Where will she be on the debate about whether to expand Social Security? It was interesting, 8 years ago, in her announcement that Howard didn't like. I thought it was not quite as terrible as he recalls, but definitely not good. But she mentioned then the importance of dealing with the deficit to put Social Security and Medicare on a sustainable footing. That is not the conversation that the Democratic Party is having now. So where will she be on the question of expanding Social Security benefits for everybody? So there is a theme. What the exact components of it will be to be fleshed out, I would hope.
Howard, the rationale question, is it not clear? Is it not clear enough? Do Americans require a kind of crystal clarity about that, that she's going to have to muster afresh?
Well, I think she has she's put forward a personal rationale that ties in directly to the overarching sort of policy sentiments that she expressed and that Ruth discussed. I think,
and her grandbaby, and other grandbabies.
Yeah, exactly. So I think if people want to believe that, they can. I know Hillary well enough to know that she really does care about her family. She did a fantastic job rearing Chelsea along with Bill, and she is over the moon about her granddaughter. And that's all very real and appealing. And does play into the broader theme of being the sort of planetary, civic-minded grandma that she's selling herself as. But Ruth's right. She's got to be specific. She's going to have to be specific on things. She's going to have to flesh all of that out. And on social issues, Ruth helped me out on this. I don't know if, or Tom, I don't know that Hillary has flatly said what her current position is in flat terms on gay marriage. I think she's for its recognition and legalization throughout the country. I think that's a winning issue at this point, by the way, and one that the Republicans are running away from for the most part as fast as they can. So she should be very clear and specific. I agree with that, and I think that would help her.
Ruth, of course, she put two gay guys right there in her video announcement.
As I recall, there were two gay couples in the announcement, and that is really a measure of how magnificently and quickly far the country has moved on this question in the long 8 years since Hillary. I think the caller is correct. Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama were not exactly forthcoming about right. what their personal views were on the issue. Howard's recollection is correct. Hillary Clinton has been clear that she is supportive of legalizing same-sex marriage. So that's that issue has been transformed from an issue that could be used as a wedge and a cudgel against Democratic candidates to an issue that, if it ends up hurting anybody, could end up hurting Republican candidates who won't be able potentially to support marriage equality in a general election campaign, because the demographics of the issue are such that it's completely clear younger voters, Republican and Democrats, are entirely supportive of marriage equality.
Howard, you point out you've watched her for a long time in the role of mother, admired her in that way. She loves her family, I guess. I mean, everybody does. But when it comes to policy, There we get into how different families are doing in this country, and there's a huge, huge gaps there right now. Stand by, Howard and Ruth. Bill Curry joins us right now from Hartford, Connecticut. He's a columnist for Salon. He wrote on Sunday, Hillary Clinton just doesn't get it. She's already running a losing campaign. Bill, what's your complaint?
Well, first of all, the complaints are about three things. One, it's about really the state of the entire Democratic Party in how it approaches all public debate and all contests now. You know, after 2014, all Democratic congressional leaders were reelected without any kind of challenge, debate, or even a show of hands. It was the worst one of the most terrible defeats that any party had suffered in modern times. But there wasn't even a bit of complaint. We just elected Chuck Schumer, head of the Senate, without an opponent, without a discussion. Schumer is the absolute guardian and protector of the Democrats' late-life marriage to Wall Street. And for all the talk about populism and the need to defend the middle class, there wasn't even a conversation. And now Hillary appears to be the first person in an open contest to be nominated by acclamation a year before you even have a caucus. This is a mistake. This is a fundamental mistake. This is not how you keep the marketplace of ideas alive. This is not how a party, a political party, functions. If the Democratic Party goes radio silent 19 months before the election, how will anyone even know it's alive?
I'm reading Robert Kuttner in Howard's Huffington Post, though, saying we progressives should feel pretty good about ourselves after watching Hillary Clinton's launch video. The core economic theme was there. Most Americans aren't getting ahead. The top is taking too much.
One of the things part of the downside of the legacy of Barack Obama, but maybe a positive thing, is that it's not enough just to have a vision or a theme or, as I've been empowered to, a policy sentiment. Every vision needs a blueprint. The next politician to say, yes, we can, has to answer some hard questions. People look at the condition of their politics and their government, and it seems odious to them. It's driving patriots away from civics. One of the problems for Democrats is they may not get the natural rising tide of participation in this election. We have to make a case here. And I was just stunned yesterday. I like Hillary Clinton. I see much to like about her. I don't agree with some core policies, and I don't think this is a winning campaign. It reminds me very much of her last campaign so far, dependent on $2.5 billion. I've never seen a candidate not show up for her own announcement and send a video. She spent her announcement day indoors and sent a video in which she only appeared – she barely showed up for the video. I've never seen a man in the street ad in politics in which the people talking didn't say something substantive about politics or government, you know, or how Congressman Sludge Pump helped us get our Social Security benefits. It was all about their own lives and then she about hers, the very opposite of what her campaign says they're trying to do. People talk about authenticity. In our politics right now, absent content, there can be no authenticity. What voters think they see politicians doing is evading their responsibility and evading issues. And if all you've got are a bunch of catchphrases and atmospherics and themes, for a Democrat especially, for Republicans, the more abstract it gets, the better they are. Their positions on almost all the issues they're fighting on right now are unpopular, and yet we're tied. And I think one of the reasons is that the system we have in place, all the Democrats agree to fight it out on the with Republican weapons by telling their story better, what David Axelrod calls the politics of biography. I swear it's not enough now. And if Hillary doesn't find that out in the primaries, if I'm right, and she doesn't find out until the general election, then we're really cooked.
Ruth, what do you make of that analysis? Not enough gritty content here. Biography will not cut it this time out.
Well, I'm all for gritty content, but here I think I want to come a little bit to Hillary Clinton's defense on a few things. One is the implicit contrast between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. And so I completely agree that gauzy visions are not enough. And one of the disappointments of the Obama presidency has been that his vision of bringing together red and blue America turned out to be a lot harder to execute than it was to talk about. And one thing that did not come up in the video yesterday, but I think will be implicit, if not explicit, in the Hillary Clinton campaign, is the degree to which she is, much more experienced coming into the potential presidency than Barack Obama was, and B, much more realistic and I think clear-sighted about the difficulties of working with a partisan Congress, and also has demonstrated a much more of a capacity to do that and to be able to negotiate agreements even with people that and work even with people that you disagree with.
Howard, there's the deep agenda. There's the actual deep vision, if it's strong enough and rooted enough. And then there's capacity to execute. Do you think that Hillary Clinton has a very different capacity to execute than Barack Obama? And what about Bill Curry's concerns about the vision itself and whether it's thoroughgoing enough to address some of the deep equity issues in this country?
Well, 2 points, or a few. First of all, it's good to hear from Bill.
Thank you, Howard.
Who's had this... Who's been a useful critic of a party he loves for a long time. So I think a lot of what he said was, to coin a phrase, very much on point. She said in the ad, "The deck is still stacked in favor of those at the top."
That sounds like Elizabeth Warren language.
Okay.
To my ear.
Yes. Exactly. So what is Hillary going to do about it? What specifically is she going to do to address the historic levels of wealth inequality in America? How do you go about that? She's going to have to be specific. I agree. She also said that Americans have struggled to survive in the recession, and implicitly that was the Obama era. But now they have to be able to not just get by, but get ahead and stay ahead, she said. Okay, well, how specifically are you going to do that? What are you going to do? Let's hear the specifics. I agree that she needs to do that. Now, as to whether if she gets elected, she can deal with Congress more effectively than Barack Obama, I would have to say that overall, and not by any means entirely for his own lack of trying or his own fault, it would be hard to do worse. Mm. I mean, relations between the presidency and the Congress are at a terrible low point. And it's all well and good that we have checks and balances that the founders designed, but they didn't want the kind of constant sniping and open warfare we have between our two leadership institutions. So I think that would have to be something that Hillary would want to address. She's got all the risks and burdens of having been around forever and having 40 years worth of experience and having been First Lady and having been Secretary of State and knowing all these people. She's got the downsides of that. She may as well try to emphasize what are at least theoretically the upsides, which is that she knows how to and is not afraid to jump in and use the levers of power in an institution that, after all, she was a part of for a good part of her career.
Of course, Bill, so was Barack Obama. Do you see more capacity to work across this very, very deeply divided Congress, Pennsylvania Avenue divide?
Sure, I do. First of all, Hillary Clinton has spent 20 years of her life being, taken out and rolled in an alley by these by vicious Republicans. One of her best arguments for her election in 2008 was that she understood them far better than Obama did, and she brings a lot of advantages. It's time for a woman. She could run on the slogan of if Pakistan, why not us? She has all kinds of other political talents. The problem here does come down to substance. Policy precedes message. First figure out what you believe and then how to tell people about it. And what we need here is a debate over whether this economy, global economy, really works for people, whether our politics is too corrupt to serve our people. I don't see that. That debate sure didn't start yesterday.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Hillary Clinton formally in the race for the White House. Again, her game plan for 2016 and what she would bring to governing the nation. Ruth Marcus is with us, columnist for The Washington Post. Howard Feynman's here from AOL Huffington Post Media Group, editorial director there. Bill Curry, columnist with Salon, joins us from Hartford, Connecticut. She's been talking a lot more about equity, inequality, mobility these days. Here she was March 23rd at the Center for American Progress.
We need to think hard about what we're going to do now that people are moving back into and staying in cities to make sure that our cities are not just places of economic prosperity and job creation on average, but do it in a way that lifts everybody up to deal with the overriding issues of inequality and lack of mobility.
Big language. What would that mean in policy terms? She's talking about cities there. She's headed for Iowa as we speak. Connie in Portage, Wisconsin. Connie, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Yes, I'm so excited that she's running. I'm thinking of driving over to Iowa today just to see them. I went over there when Bill and Hillary were there quite a while ago. But I'm so excited because
why?
Anybody, because she is going to be stronger than Obama, and I voted for Obama twice. But she will be stronger. She will know how to handle all of the Republicans and their slander. And already their ads are slandering. That's all they know. And I just think she's a wonderful person. And everybody I know around in Wisconsin, the ones I know, are going to vote for her.
What would make her tougher than Obama? What do you mean when you say that, Connie?
Well, because his hands were really tied. He couldn't do a thing. He had wonderful ideas, but everybody knew that he didn't have a chance because of Congress. Now, she has dealt with them a lot longer. She is stronger, and she has more money, and she will know what to do.
Stronger, more money. We'll see. In the campaign, they're talking $2 plus billion. That's a lot. Of course, there's a lot on the other side as well. Connie, we hear your excitement. Drive safely if you go to Iowa. One more right here. Camille in Charleston, South Carolina. Camille, you're on.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I am a stark contrast to your last caller. I am a feminist, largely Democrat, and there is no way I will vote for Hillary.
Why?
Under any circumstances.
Why?
Checks and balances. Checks and balances. She kept separate books, private emails during her time as Secretary of State. That ended her as a candidate for me. And I also, as a woman, I don't want my gender tagged with that coming into the White House. She was extremely divisive in terms of women during her husband's tenure. Prior to him becoming president, she had her famous, "I'm not going to stand by my man," like Tammy Wynette line, which was horrendous to a large portion of the country. And then she went on to become one of the biggest hypocrites of all time by being that very thing. And I will take my...
Camille, you're a feminist, but it's not worth it to have a woman in the White House because of stand by your man and two sets of emails, even though a lot of male politicians also have their private email accounts.
Let's have the right woman. Any woman, just she's riding there on her husband's coattails.
Camille, we've got it. Here's the sound of Hillary Clinton, of course, responding at that press conference March 10th about, yes, the private email account.
Looking back, it would have been better for me to use two separate phones and two email accounts. I thought using one device would be simpler, and obviously it hasn't worked out that way.
Ruth Marcus, you were very tough on Hillary Clinton around this whole thing. It brought back to mind questions about forthrightness when it came to the Clintons and, you know, why have two accounts and should we really trust your staff to give us everything we need to see in those emails? What about Camille's complaint, Ruth?
So I have been tough on Hillary Clinton on this subject. I thought it was a bad decision to handle it that way at the outset. I thought that in addition, the news conference that she had and the explanations that she provided were less than fully satisfying, to be polite about it and restrained. However, I remain unconvinced that there are going to be a lot of voters who are going to end up in the Camille category, who for them that they are undecided enough about Hillary Clinton that the email issue alone or in combination with other things is going to push them over the edge. So while I think that it's of concern, I am somewhat discounting it as a political phenomenon that's going to end up hurting Secretary Clinton. I do think because the caller also brought up some very old comments about staying home and baking cookies. What this goes to is Hillary Clinton's capacity to be her own worst enemy. And she has, there have been a number of self-inflicted wounds that show a kind of surprising lack of discipline on her part, especially when she feels under assault and criticized and attacked, that she will say something that ends up adding fuel to whatever fire there is. And she's going to have to do better at that this campaign than she's done previously.
Howard Fineman, does the past all come back here? Do we have to relive all those scandals, large and small, whatever you've made of them in the 90s? Do we have to get back into all of that? Has Hillary Clinton somehow grown, aged, just lived beyond that? Or do politics mean a movie never ends?
This whole thing has a little bit of a hot tub time machine quality yeah. to it.
I want that image, Howard.
Yeah.
Everybody get the towels on here, please.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, do we really want to sit around talking about the comment about Tammy Wynette? Where she said, I'm not standing by my man like Tammy Wynette or whatever.
I'm tired of it, but it's Hillary Clinton, and this is her history. So
exactly. The whole history is going to be relived and rehashed. And the fact is that Hillary has 100% name ID. And according to the polling analyses that I've been looking at, basically it's 50-50 on Hillary on whether she should be elected president or not. So everybody's pretty much made up their mind. I don't know who the undecided voters are going to be about Hillary. There are probably very, very few of them out there. And if she does get the nomination, it's going to be a very, very close run thing, because that entire history will play back again at various levels for various age groups. There'll be the Tammy Wynette thing for the older people. There'll be the Benghazi for the Gen Xers, there'll be the email accounts for the millennials, et cetera. They'll play this out. And the interesting thing here is Bill was pointing out or alluding to, if Hillary's the only person out there, the Republicans are going to have from now until Election Day in November of 2016 to just pound her. And all of them are going to be competing to see who can criticize Hillary the most. It's easy to dismiss that because it's coming from Republican foes, but the atmosphere between now and then is going to be very corrosive, and I think more dangerous to Hillary and her people than she thinks.
Jeb Bush began that yesterday, even before her announcement, with a video posted on Twitter.
We must do better than the Obama-Clinton foreign policy that has damaged relationships with our allies and emboldened our enemies. Better than their failed big government policies that grow our debt and stand in the way of real economic growth and prosperity. I believe it's conservative ideas that will renew America, grow our economy, put our fiscal house in order, and make our great country even stronger.
Well, that may sound rich, damaging relationship with allies, emboldening enemies, from the brother of George W. Bush, who took us to war in Iraq, which nobody's really cheering about now. But how about it, Bill? That is a long time to take all that incoming, as she got the ironclad Hillary cladding on this time that will help her put up with it. Do it.
Well, there's two things. First of all, there's how you conduct the campaign. And this is – she's like all Democratic candidates now. In all those years in which Republicans were building up their partisan think tanks, Cato, Heritage, Hoover, et cetera, American Enterprise, Democrats were bonding with celebrity pollsters and consultants. They were totally focused on message. You know, and we want politicians to get the courage of their convictions. Well, first get some convictions, you know, and then the courage can follow. What we need to do, we have the advantage on all of those issues. But if we're not making concrete, specific arguments, we're playing into their hands. The second thing is that there are fundamental policy debates here. And where Clinton is vulnerable in my eyes is that she and most top Democrats in the last 20 years have really been sort of in that Tom Friedman school of globalization is good. It's the golden straitjacket. You can't do anything about it, but everybody's going to be okay. Information technology is wonderful. Cell phones will make our politics more democratic.
Finance liberalization for many of those.
Global finance. You know, if people think that you love war and work for Goldman Sachs, it's going to be harder to get elected. It's going to be harder to motivate people. But forget the politics of it for a second. This isn't working. Both the president and Hillary say when they talk about economics, the first thing they always talk about is growth. Everybody else except the top Democrats can see that a rising tide no longer lifts all boats. It doesn't even lift most boats. In fact, it hardly lifts any boats. This isn't just a glitch in the business cycle. There's something fundamentally flawed here. People who think that you can raise $2.5 billion on Wall Street and then go out and fight for working families are like people who think you can smoke crack and still be good parents. There's a conflict that Democrats have to have out. I don't mean just populist outrage. I mean a real discussion about whether this works. And the same is true of I'll just give one other issue, and that is the state of government itself. I think that the reason we're ahead on every single discrete issue and still tied or behind in the overall contest across the board is that people agree with most of our policies, but
when
they don't
think –
When you
say our, you mean Democratic Party?
Democrat, the left, progressive, more progressive policies, gay marriage, global warming, immigration, Cuba, Iran. Everything Republicans have fought about in the last 6 months is a minority opinion, usually by 2-1, and yet we're tied. I think one explanation is that people so recoil from the side of their government, from its coarseness, from its partisanship, from its corruption, and from its emptiness. And the corruption piece is where it all starts. And so it's what Anthony Kennedy called soft corruption, the influence of corporations over government, this emerging kind of corporate state. And however fair or unfair you think it is, we have become sort of – you know, if the Republicans are married to Wall Street, the Democrats are now its mistress. And it isn't this isn't just about cartoon politics. There are fundamental policy questions, and if you don't put them on the table – no one's going to believe that you're going to get them a raise or make the middle class more secure or distribute power, wealth, and opportunity more fairly. And that – above all else, that's at the center of the debate. And whether you know what's wrong with the government, they don't think that Democrats know what's wrong with the government. One of Clinton's challenges to remind people of the Clinton administration rather than the Clinton White House, which became a symbol of pay-for-play – fast-track politics. It's not just a process issue. It's not just an image issue. It's a fundamental issue of how this democracy is serving its people.
Howard Feinman, it's easy to imagine with the kind of messages coming out of the early GOP, the announced candidates there and more, sort of, and it's once again, it's get government out of the way. On the other hand, you think of Hillary Clinton. I'm not sure where she's going to go on policy here, but if it's, what is it, save Social Security. That sounds like a debate we've had since the Reagan-Mondale years. It doesn't sound very 2016, very 21st century to my ear. Not big enough or not attuned enough on either side. We'll have plenty of time to talk about Republicans, Marco Rubio coming in today. But do you see Hillary Clinton prepared to take the policy debate forward in a very current way? It grips with our very current problems, Howard.
Well, I'm not sure about that, and I think that's one of the dangers of a lack of a if there is going to be one, a lack of a real race on the Democratic side. I happen to think that even though Hillary has an overwhelming advantage within the party at this point, even though she looks impossible to take on in any serious way, I think there's going to have to be some more of the kind of debate that Bill is talking about. I don't know who is going to be the vehicle of it. It's not going to be Elizabeth Warren, apparently. Maybe Martin O'Malley will be that person, or Bernie Sanders, or whomever. But I think that it will be useful to Hillary and necessary for her to sharpen what she's proposing, to have the blueprint, to defend the blueprint, if she can. But if she doesn't if the Democrats don't make this argument with her, I'm not sure the Republicans will. If, as Bill says, they're married to Wall Street and the Democrats are merely the mistress of Wall Street, which Republican is going to take her on the question of her ties to Wall Street? That would be really interesting to see. It's probably not going to be Jeb Bush if he's the nominee.
No.
But, you know, but it could be if there's a young somewhat outsidery, somewhat libertarian person, you know, who I'm thinking about, Rand Paul, primarily. And Rand Paul's trying to make it already a two-way race between him and Hillary. That could get interesting, and that could open up some opportunities for the Republicans that they otherwise wouldn't have.
And then there's this guy. This is a skit sent from Saturday Night Live just this weekend. You'll hear an actor acting Hillary, and then another, Bill.
I am running because I want to be a voice for women everywhere.
Did someone say women everywhere? Hillary would make a great president.
Thank you.
And I would make an even greater first dude.
Thank you, Bill. That's nice.
First dude, the great triangulator himself. How does he factor into this debate about Hillary's principles when it comes to the economy and governing, Ruth? Just half a minute here.
Well, I would give a lot to be able to cover Bill as first dude. He is Hillary Clinton's secret weapon, and also potentially a real problem, and how that's going to play out is going to be amazingly fascinating to watch as the debate goes forward.
Well, we have many, many months to do it. Maybe more than some would like. Maybe more than Hillary Clinton herself would like. It's going to take a big appetite for campaigning. So far, the field more or less to herself here. Marco Rubio in today. More coming. Great talking with all of you this hour about this formal plunge by Hillary Clinton again. Ruth Marcus at The Washington Post, thanks so much for being with us, Ruth.
Thanks, Tom.
Howard Feynman, editorial director of the AOL Huffington Post Media Group. Thank you, Howard.
Thank you, Tom.
And Bill Curry at Salon, columnist there. Great to have you with us today, Bill. Come again.
Tom, great. Thank you very much.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.